It's Friday, October 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Thailand mourns the death of its revered king.
So much to learn, so many people, new people to meet, so many people to help in the world.
The story of Syrian refugees in Britain. Also ahead, Russia tries to move past Olympic doping. The Nobel Prize goes to Bob Dylan. It's all on today's International Edition. The world's longest reigning monarch is dead. The King of Thailand has died at age 88 on Thursday, according to the Bureau of the Royal Household. The king had been in poor health for a long time, primarily spending his last years in a Bangkok hospital. And worries about the king's condition heightened after a Sunday night health bulletin was issued by the palace, stating his condition was not stable after kidney dialysis and replacing a tube used to drain fluid from his lung. VOA correspondent Ron Corbin is in Bangkok. He has more on the king's death in this conversation with International Edition's Ira Melman.
The relationship was very strong with the Thai people, especially in the rural areas. When he came back to Bangkok ascended the throne in 1950, he took some time to find his way into the role of the king and his majesty. What he did over a long period of time was to travel throughout the country to villages and to meeting people, promoting development projects. He was known as one who was with a science degree. He was very close to the people, especially in the early years of his reign.
He's been ill for a long time. What do you hear is going on? What's the next step?
The next step will be the decision on the heir. And at the moment, as far as we understand it, the heir apparent is his son, Prince Vajiralong Ergon. That seems to be the case. That's been reported for some time that the king designated his son as the heir apparent in 1972 when he invested him as a crown prince. And there doesn't seem to have been that much change from there. His sister, Princess Sirintorn, was also recognized with a similar title. Some people had believed that it may have been left to either the advisor to the king, the Privy Council, that may have made the final decision in regard to who would succeed.
How involved and how influential is the King of Thailand?
King Bhumibol was influential not because he was involved with the politics directly, but because of his particular personal presence. Also, he was one that maintained a level of moral righteousness. He said when he ascended the throne back in 1950 that he said, "We will reign with righteousness for the benefit and happiness of the Siamese people." And he's been a person that's been recognized by the Thais as having high principles. So he's had a very special place in people's, you know, hearts and minds for a long period of time.
So one would theorize then logically that the death of the king would not lead to any big changes as far as the Thai government is concerned.
Many say that the military took power in May 2014 to ensure that there was a smooth transition. People were even then aware of what was coming. The king was not in good health. So their role in the military was always to be there to steady the country as it moves through this delicate phase.
VOA correspondent Ron Corbin in Bangkok. We turn now to our social media segment to see what the online buzz is about our top story. And for that, International Edition's Ji Abby Lee joins me in Studio 22. Hello, Ji.
Hi, Jim. What a sad day for Thailand. Mm. Many reporters on the scene are tweeting photos of the grieving Thai people in front of the Sri Raj Hospital where the king passed away. The U.S. State Department tweeted President Barack Obama's statement on the king's passing, and also the United Kingdom's mission to the United Nations also shared photos of a one-minute silence in his honor at the General Assembly Hall. Jim, I also learned something quite interesting. A Western media outlet shared an infographic that showed a photo of the late king with his name written next to it. And the most liked reply to that tweet reads, "It's not proper to put the headline text aligned with our king's head. Please remove that text for respect."
Well, that's pretty interesting. I would not have known that that's inappropriate. Mm. What else happens to be trending?
Well, yet another change to leadership, but this time at the United Nations. The UN appointed Portugal's former Prime Minister António Guterres as the next Secretary General. He will succeed South Korea's Ban Ki-moon and begin his service on January 1st. The different accounts of many UN agencies share that news, and here's an example from the main UN account. "His political instincts are those of the UN, cooperation for common good and shared responsibility for people and planet."
Anything else that happens to be trending?
South Korea's electronics giant Samsung is still in the hot seat for its Galaxy Note 7 phones, and the company supplied fireproof boxes and safety gloves to the Galaxy Note 7 customers. As you know, that model suffered issues with the battery catching fire. People are sharing photos of the state-of-the-art return kit on social media, and many are wondering how much it would have cost the company to include a thermally insulated box. Jim, back to you.
Well, that's a very good point. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. We're also out there on our individual accounts. Feel free to follow at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, world leaders express condolences to Thai people and the royal family. Rights group blasts Malaysia over free speech. United Nations says most deaths from natural disasters occur in poor countries. Philippines to open giant rehab center soon, funded by China tycoon. Many Vietnamese Americans face a difficult choice at the polls. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more too at the voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, follow it all using our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Hungarian officials recently declared several British cities no-go zones where immigrants, many of them Muslim, dominate, and using these areas as examples of why Hungary should not accept migrants or refugees. One of the cities mentioned is Peterborough in Britain, and has protested, and it has begun to receive Syrian refugees after a careful debate among city leaders. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez brings us more.
Suad El Marsoumi, an asylum seeker, defies stereotypes of the newcomer who will not assimilate and who will take more than give.
I'm graduate from the College of Economic in Iraq. I have a business administration degree in my country, and I was work in Ministry of Finance in Iraq.
While she waits for asylum, Suad offers free sewing lessons at this refugee center in Peterborough.
Until now, I cannot work because I still wait the decision of home office to my case.
Peterborough has a history of welcoming migrants and refugees. The first large wave came in the 1950s.
The city has a heart, a real culture to it, which is one of acceptance. The debate wasn't about whether or not we should accept Syrian refugees. The debate in the first instance was really, do we have the finances to support any new arrivals?
Support for things like assimilation, something the city struggled to help with in the past. In Suad's neighborhood, English is not often heard on the street.
Cultural assimilation isn't a problem when you've got small numbers of migrants, or in this case, refugees.
The consensus on Syrian refugees was to offer a careful, managed welcome, 25 families over 5 years. Donations of furniture and food have poured in.
We will help anyone that has a need. We'll help anyone whether they have faith, no faith, no matter what background they come from.
If you can't speak English, we are able to help you to speak English so you move into the employment. For the job seeker allowance to the route to employment, we can help you.
Such reassurances do not appease everyone. A few residents told us they oppose taking more newcomers, but wouldn't do so on camera. One thing all sides agree on is that Peterborough is not a no-go zone, as Hungarian officials argued. Incidentally, one of the most visible groups in this immigrant neighborhood is Hungarians. With some Peterborough natives apparently happy at the prospect of more migrants, they are also taking advantage of what those already here have to offer.
It's brilliant coming here. So much to learn, so many people, new people to meet, so many people to help in the world. We all get on great as a team, don't we?
One stitch at a time, Suad has gone from one who receives help to one who gives it.
I won't feel I'm human. I'm still human. I'm still in the life.
Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Peterborough, England.
This year's World Disasters Report warns that thousands of lives are being lost and property destroyed from natural disasters because governments and local communities are failing to prepare for these potentially calamitous events. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report by the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in Geneva.
There is no way to stop a natural disaster from occurring, but there are ways to prevent it from becoming a catastrophic event. Authors of the World Disasters Report note many natural disasters, such as hurricanes, floods, and drought, are related to climate change and can be predicted. Therefore, they argue, governments can lessen their impact by investing in preparedness and measures to reduce disaster risk. El Hadj Assi is Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. He says the effort put into early warning alerts and early response can determine whether a hazard will be a disaster or not.
It makes sense not to invest in preparedness. It makes sense to invest in resilience because not only is it a moral thing to do, but it is also a smart thing to do from an economic point of view, and more importantly, it saves lives, and that is the ultimate, you know, most important goal.
Last year, the report says 108 million people were affected by disasters. It notes the number and scale of disasters triggered by natural hazards are increasing. Co-editor of the report, David Sanderson, says when it comes to humanitarian aid, business as usual is not an option.
Something like $100 billion has been spent in disasters between 1991 and 2010. Two-thirds of that has gone into response. 40 cents of every $100 spent is only spent on disastrous reduction. It's a drop in the ocean.
Forced migration is at its highest level since World War II, with over 65 million forcibly displaced people from war-torn countries such as Syria, Yemen, and South Sudan. Authors of the report warn this forced migration is likely to increase in coming years as climate change kicks in and people seek refuge from environmental disasters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The head of Russia's Olympic Committee, Alexander Zhukov, resigned Wednesday. As analysts say, Russia is seeking to move on from the doping scandal that saw dozens of its athletes banned from this summer's Rio Olympics. Still, VOA's Henry Ridgewell reports that Moscow will struggle to regain the full trust of the global sporting community.
Alexander Zhukov is one of the most powerful men in the tainted world of Russian sport and is also a key political ally of President Vladimir Putin, who said Wednesday that his friend wanted to concentrate on his role as first deputy speaker in the Russian parliament.
Олимпийский цикл закончился, новый только начинается.
This is without doubt the right thing, Putin said. Alexander Zhukov has done a lot for sport and I hope will do more still. Putin did not make any connection between Zhukov's departure and the doping scandal that saw dozens of their nation's Olympic athletes and the entire Russian Paralympic team banned from this summer's games in Rio de Janeiro. But Olympic historian Philip Barker says Russia is likely trying to make a fresh start.
It's very hard for the Russians now because that bond of trust has actually been broken quite significantly.
Zhukov was chairman of the organizing committee for the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014. In its July report that sent shockwaves across the sporting community, the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, concluded that Russia had run a state-sponsored doping program, even smuggling out positive samples from a Sochi laboratory through a hole drilled in a wall and then replacing them with clean samples. It will take more than a new face to restore Russia's sporting image, says Barker.
There are a few remedies that they can take, and one of them will probably not come easy to them, to throw open their laboratories to international inspectors and not to put any pressure on them. Whistleblowers and people who've tried to say something have been subject to considerable pressure and even intimidation at times.
Russia has accepted there were shortcomings in its anti-doping operations, but says it is being unfairly singled out for political reasons. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Be sure to stop by our website, voanews.com, for more on this and many other stories. And you can follow us on Twitter as well, at @VOA_IE, and check out our Facebook page at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. Legendary American musician Bob Dylan has won the 2016 Nobel Prize in Literature. He's the first songwriter to receive the prestigious award. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us for more on the announcement.
On top of being a musical legend and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Bob Dylan, at the age of 75, has won the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Swedish Academy made the announcement on Thursday. They described his work as having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. Dylan is the first U.S. artist to win the Literature Nobel since Toni Morrison did it back in 1993. And he's also the first literature laureate whose career has primarily involved music. Dylan was long rumored to be a contender, but he was far down the list of this year's favorites, so he was kind of a dark horse, and he came through. Bob Dylan is going to receive an 18-karat gold medal and a check for about $925,000, which ain't bad, even when you're Bob Dylan. So congratulations, Bobby. He is pretty phenomenal when you get right down to it. He is 75, so the Nobel Committee may have taken that into consideration, at least in the back of their minds. He did have some serious health problems, I guess, about 20 years ago. He came close to dying. But ever since then, he has embarked on what is often referred to as an endless tour. I mean, the man is always on the road. And still releasing albums, too. His latest, his 37th studio album, Fallen Angels, came out in May. He performed at the Desert Trip Festival last weekend. And then this weekend, and of course, Desert Trip is being held out in Indio, California, and it brings together some of the greatest classic rock acts, the Stones, Paul McCartney, The Who, Neil Young, they're all there, and Dylan's there too. He's currently touring the U.S. on his own. This leg will extend through November 23rd. So even more so than the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan is showing that you can be a senior citizen and still have a very active musical career, and this might be the cherry on top. He is now a Literature Nobel laureate. So congratulations to Bob Dylan.
So this prize is more for his body of work over time.
It is, yes. They take it as literature. It's like, obviously, they're song lyrics, But the Nobel Committee says you can read it and also receive that enjoyment from it.
There's so many great songwriters through the years. This perhaps opens the door for more.
Well, people have been mentioning Leonard Cohen from Canada, who was a published poet before he became a musician. Leonard is 82. Mm-hmm. He has a new album out, and I could see him winning some literary prizes because he's very much in the vein of Bob Dylan, a different sort of artist, but again, a literary artist who works in the musical medium.
If they had a Nobel Prize for countdowns of songs, Ray McDonald certainly would be there with the medal on. Ray, our top 20 countdown host each week, and very vibrant as well. Check out his literary works on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
All right, Jim.
How does it feel?
You've been listening to International Edition. You'll always find us at our website, voanews.com, where you can stream the program or download it and take it with you. Like us on Facebook as well at VOA Now, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
41 years ago, the Helsinki Final Act recognized the universal significance of human rights and fundamental freedoms and committed every signatory nation to promote universal and effective respect for them. In a speech to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe's Human Dimension meeting, U.S. Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, noted that every threat to the security of Europe has resulted from the actions of states that deny human rights to their own people. Throughout the course of the Human Dimension meeting, as Assistant Secretary Malinowski highlighted in his remarks, one truth kept coming up: the necessity of promoting tolerance and ensuring a strong and active civil society to address contemporary challenges, such as that presented by violent extremism. In the context of the OSCE's comprehensive approach to security, the human dimension has a direct and measurable impact on the security and economic dimensions. The human dimension remains critical to our collective ability to address the stark security threats we now face. As Assistant Secretary Malinowski noted in his remarks, those governments that persecute as so-called foreign agents civil society groups that are so essential to maintaining checks and balances in any democracy are clearly violating the principles of the Helsinki Final Act. They are hurting and disrespecting their people, for instance, as Russia, Azerbaijan, and several other countries in Central Asia have done in cracking down on citizens' groups, including those dedicated to fighting torture, educating about HIV/AIDS, and even protecting migratory birds. Despite mounting pressure in many participating states against civil society and independent media, civil society representatives spoke movingly at this year's Human Dimension meeting about the true human rights situations in a number of participating states, including Russia, Azerbaijan, and several Central Asian states. The United States will continue to uphold and to champion the democratic ideals embodied in the Helsinki Final Act. We will continue to defend the OSCE, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, and resist every effort to weaken its institutions and our common commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.